Good morning, welcome to our meeting, it's 9:00 AM on March 19th, 2024, and time to convene a regular meeting in Snowish County PD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. To my right is Tony Olson, our Vice President. To my left is Rebecca Wolf, Park Secretary. The table near me is John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, and Colin Lonebrock, our General Counsel. Also with us today is Allison Morrison, our Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices, game boys, et cetera. This session is for the Board and the CEO General Manager to study and discuss issues among yourselves with the UD staff. First on our agenda is item one, our General Manager briefing study session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Commissioners. So before we get off into the presentations, I want to start by introducing our new water AGM, and hopefully I caught him off guard. Jeff Kalstrom, and I know you all know Jeff, but we are super excited to have Jeff. And Jeff, you prepared a five-minute speech or?
He's an attorney, that ought to be easy.
No, I was not, but thank you for your introduction.
First lawyer joke in the world.
I'm not a lawyer anymore, so. Yeah, it's an honor to be part of the Water Shop. It's a great, great place. It's an awesome environment, a really, a great family. I've had an opportunity to be over there for a few days, and it's an outstanding group. And then the work they do in the community is just, you know, to be a part of that is a real honor. So I'm really excited for the opportunity and looking forward to what the future has.
Great, welcome.
You're getting your feet wet?
So we're going from lawyer jokes to now water jokes.
Water jokes.
They're all bad jokes.
Thank you, Jeff. We had the legislative update in the packet, and we have our fantastic PR team here if you have any questions.
I have no questions.
I have no questions. Just figuring my heart goes off.
Hello.
All right, excellent. And one other update, the surplus and sale for Poplar Way overpass extension, we have removed that from the agenda this morning, and I'll be coming back to you at a later date. We have some additional work to do on that. So first up is our commercial strategic energy management agreement, and Kelsey Lewis. Good morning, Kelsey.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. This is right, Mike, hi. As John mentioned, I'm Kelsey Lewis, Energy Program Manager in Energy Services, and it's been a while since I've been here. I was last here in January of '23 to request approval of our first commercial strategic energy management program. So I'm here today to give context to an amendment requesting additional resources to meet customer demand for that program, and also to give you an update on the good work that you've allowed us to do with that program launch. No action is required today, but you'll see this amendment on the consent agenda at the next commission meeting. And feel free to interrupt me with questions as you have them, and then we'll have time at the end as well. So before I start bragging about our program participants on this slide, I just want to give a review of strategic energy management, or SEM, for the audience. And SEM is really focused on low to no cost behavioral-based improvements, and people and relationships are really at the heart of SEM. So it takes a long time. We develop these relationships, and then we do more of the in energy management. And we've had an industrial SEM program since 2016, so while commercial SEM is new to us as a segment, the SEM program is not. Okay, so let's talk about our beautiful first cohort. We had 12 participants launch in June of 23 with several school districts, municipalities, a community college, the port, and several private businesses, including health insurance, real estate, biotech, and grocery segments. Our plan was to have 10 participants, but through our partnership with Puget Sound Energy, we were able to include some participants anchored in their program and provide benefits to dual fuel customers, so they get both electric and gas incentives for their participation. There are several reasons why now is a good time to have a strong commercial SEM program. One is that the Clean Buildings Law has shifted the dynamic that has been historically challenging for us, which is where there's split incentives between owners and tenants of commercial buildings. Also, BPA added a commercial SEM measure in 2022, so it's easier for us to get reimbursed for those savings. And the IRP shows that we need savings as soon as possible. So here's the 2023 IRP. In light blue, we have the energy efficiency needed over time. The x-axis is years, and the y-axis is annual megawatts. So over the next 10 years, we're seeing an increase of 400% of the amount of energy efficiency that we need to meet our resource acquisition targets. And historically, more than 90% of our energy efficiency comes from the commercial and industrial sector. So this program serves a strategically important market of folks that we haven't deeply engaged with in the past. So let's talk about benefits to participants. First up, they learn how to fish. They get training, workshops, individualized coaching, energy scans, a model to see how they're performing compared to where they started. They get an incentive for saving energy on top of lowering their energy bill, a healthy fund to purchase equipment to help track their energy, and $1,000 just for setting up their energy team. And for participants working towards clean buildings compliance, that $25,000 for equipment has been really helpful to purchase sub metering, particularly when it's a public entity with limited funds. That's been a key benefit. And they also get a sense of camaraderie in facing these shared challenges together in a cohort setting, so they're not on their own. And I'd like to highlight that we're not required to offer commercial SEM. There are several utilities in the region who don't offer it as a program, but we saw through our Clean Buildings Accelerator that there was a need to keep working and go deeper. So we decided to walk alongside our customers through the challenges that they're facing. And of course, there's benefits to us. As I mentioned in the IRP, resource acquisition, we're seeing an average of 5% savings for our current cohort, which is towards the higher end of the average 2 to 6%, and we're estimating between 400,000 to 600,000 kilowatt hours in the first year of this cohort. We're expecting more capital projects. Energy Trust of Oregon did a study that says on average they increased by 26% through SEM participation, and energy champions often go on to continue working in energy efficiency, so we're also developing that workforce and capacity to help us.
Is the 5%, is it fairly painless for them?
Can you say that again?
Is the 5%, has it been fairly painless for them to achieve that?
Yeah, and I have a few examples. We're starting with the low-hanging fruit. So, yeah, we have had some pretty easy first wins. And so in addition to resource acquisition and workforce development, it's also about customer service. And we're able to keep our largest customers engaged over a long period of time so that if they have transition, we can be there to support them through that and kind of lend a helping hand as they navigate those changes. So I'd like to highlight a few customer success stories, the first one being from Everett Community College. And we found that in SEM, having an engaged executive sponsor is key to performance. And at ECC, they have a really engaged executive sponsor in Erica Diaz. She's also the facilities director. And under her leadership, their energy team realized that they needed to add the custodial manager to understand their custodial staff schedules and realized that they were running more often than they needed to. So they were able to cut that back by 50% on some of their systems. And what I love about this example is that it really highlights how important collaborative inclusivity can be to making those simple adjustments, because you can't make the change if you don't have the information. And next up is Scottsdale Real Estate. They were running some of their HVAC systems all the time, whether the building was occupied or not, and that's exemplified in the image on the left where you just see it in the on position. And so they've cut back to turn on and off when the building's occupied, which you see in the right image where it goes on and off. And so they've just made those changes recently, and we're hoping to see that in their performance. So there will be many more stories to come. But let's get into the amendment. So our original plan was to launch two cohorts over a four-year period, one starting every 2 years. But after we launched our first cohort, we had some customers say, hey, 2023, I'm not quite ready, but how about next year? And we've had 5 Clean Buildings Accelerator cohorts, so we have a healthy pipeline of potential participants who want to deepen their work. So we're proposing to move that second cohort up to 2024, add a third cohort in 2025, and build a continuous cohort so that once you complete your first 2 years, you join this like alumni cohort where you get to expand and be part of a bigger SEM community as you deepen your work. Essentially, we realized that we had more customer demand than we were ready for. In addition to adding cohorts, we're seeing the need to add buildings. Initially, we were going to do 2 buildings per participant, but we found, particularly with school districts, that they could easily add 10 times that number of buildings. And with their lower enrollments, budget cuts, they're losing their ESCO contracts and people to do energy management work. That's definitely a segment that we're thinking about with this expansion of buildings. So we're proposing to start with 2 and then add 1 per year so that they can keep applying their lessons learned. And this would increase the total number of buildings in the contract from 40 to 150 over that 4 years. So to do this expansion, we are requesting to add $1.2 million to the budget. A bulk of that increase comes from the cohorts and buildings, but we're also adding energy management assessments, which help energy teams see what their biggest opportunities are from an organizational level. We're also moving our models from Excel to an online platform, and that means they get more real-time updates. So instead of having to wait 3 months to know how your work is impacting, you can see it more quickly. We're adding energy scans and increasing the number of in-person workshops because we want to capitalize on our ability to meet in person, and networking is really at the heart of SEM. So I just want to clarify that we're not asking to spend this money today, but we're asking to expand our capacity to do this work in, over the next several years to allow us to meet our energy acquisition targets, meet customers where they're at in this demand, and also support customers facing compliance, particularly customers with limited public funds. So this contract amendment will be on the consent agenda for April 2nd, and we plan for it to go into effect shortly after with our second cohort to launch this summer. Do you have any questions for me?
Questions? A couple. If I may,
yeah.
What about hospitals? I know that they're, I guess they're nonprofits, and so you're only targeting commercial. So like this nonprofit, like if we're looking at our own like HVAC system and are we running 24/7, things like that,
yeah.
What else is out there?
Yeah, we're planning to engage with the utility to join as one of our participants in the next cohort. We've also reached out to a few hospitals. We are looking to work with Boeing's commercial segment as well. Are we asking about additional potential participants?
Prospectively.
Yeah, other school districts, municipalities, the city of Everett is interested, the Navy. And so we'll also continue to partner with Puget Sound Energy and make sure that customers get
well, out. I think your framing is great. Your alumni idea is just very brilliant. Alumni cohorts.
Yeah, because we've seen on the industrial side, folks can stay in for up to 8 years, you know, if they have enough opportunity. Uh-huh. So they don't necessarily need to learn the basics over and over again, but it's nice not to do it alone.
Great.
Well, I'm thrilled. This is great that we're expanding this program. It seems to me that making these relations, generating these relationships will be key, especially the future things that come, right? So when you get to really understand your electric use, and then we bring in different rate models, maybe more willing to adopt them, or and I mean having been responsible for a school district and its power usage, it's just challenging when you have so many people so many light bulbs get left on. And there's so many opportunities, so.
Absolutely, and we found that they're often our first customers willing to try other programs because they trust us.
And the other thing you touched on too is buildings, new buildings are very smart, but they're also challenging for people to operate. The programming of the HVAC systems is complicated, and people don't necessarily have those people on staff, and paying people to do that is expensive. So help that we can, you know, do along those lines, I think, is also very beneficial. So I'm thrilled.
Well,
any more questions, Commissioner?
No, thank you.
No.
No.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey. And just one additional plug. Kelsey had mentioned as an example, the Everett Community College. Brenda White and I, and I believe Rob McManus, who was the key accounts representative for the Everett Community College, met new president, Dr. Crawford, a couple months ago. And Erica Diaz, who Chelsea referenced as their facilities director, was in that meeting, in the introductory meeting, and just gave outstanding praise to Kelsey and her team, to Rob and her team, for this partnership that we have with Everett Community College. And it's just, again, a glowing example of how our teams are out engaged with folks in a very, very effective way. Just, yeah, Erica couldn't say enough good things about how the team has really come to their rescue in trying to manage some of the policy and legislative compliance obligations that they have to meet, as well as saving them money in which those partnerships are critical.
Yeah, and you know, I think the other thing is we want to be the trusted energy advisor.
Yep.
And I know when I was managing buildings, I was under constant offers to invest a lot of money with for-profit firms to help me without really knowing what the reward was going to be.
Yeah.
It's a full court press of people who have a pretty strong reputation coming to you. And so it's great to have.
I thought it was also significant that for Everett Community College, the key was the custodian.
Yeah.
You've got to get those people in the room early.
Yeah, no, exactly right.
Secretaries and custodians, that's when you're in a building, which I was from, you know, different schools. It's key. You have to know your secretary.
They run the place.
Those are the people that you have to know.
Yeah.
Is your full court press, is that a March Madness reference? Are you?
Yeah, I'm not really a basketball person. If you want it to be.
Excellent. Next up is our Connect Up quarterly update with Kevin Labering and Tim Epp. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, John.
Morning, Tim.
Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
Morning.
We're excited to be here. So I'm here with Tim Epp and myself, Kevin Labering, senior program managers on the Connect Up program. Last time, our last update was in December of 2023. So once again, we're here to provide an update, what's gone on over the last 3 months, and to provide a picture of what's coming up in the near future. So our agenda today, we'll be talking about meter delivery and forecast update, which has been a hot topic for us. We'll also look at the overall program schedule and budget review. We'll then look at our current phase, which is the deployment phase, and talk about our progress report around meter deployments, our base station installations, and then also talk about a current survey that went out to our customers, Energy Insight Survey. Tim will also will then be talking about benefits realization, our process tuning. Now that we're experiencing meters out in the field, we're able to utilize our processes and make improvements there. Tim will also be talking about our Connect Up 2.0, so that's looking at our future benefits and preparing and planning for those. And we'll talk about next steps. So first item, meter delivery and forecast update. So this slide, in some ways, it's good. It hasn't changed much. So it hasn't gotten tighter, really, and we're seeing things really turning the corner around this. You mentioned last time about Census trying to address the limitations on producing meters. So they've continued to make progress in building a third manufacturing line. And so we're seeing that being completed end of second quarter, so coming up this June. And then so we should be seeing meters a meter uptick from that third quarter of this year. Also, they've continued to do improvements to their existing manufacturing lines, and they're seeing benefits from that. Additionally, they were able to deliver 3,000 more meters than they were planning on during this first quarter. So we see that as another sign as things turning the corner for Census. And then on the district side, things that we're doing to mitigate limited number of meters being delivered to us is in April, we will be meeting with Census to talk about this new meter that they've designed, the DT121. And so this potentially could supplement our existing meter, our DT96 meters. And that one is currently being tested at a couple of test utilities, right? Or not test, a couple of utilities right now. And so far, testing's going well. So if things continue to go well with that, in April, we'll have a discussion with them to do a checkup on the quality. It is a new product. We want to make sure that it's working well, that it's successful before we adopt it into our blend of meters. If things go well with that, we could supplement our 25 and 2026 meter installations with those. Regarding our forecast updates, the slide has stayed the same, which again is good news. It hasn't, things have not tightened up more, and Census is still feeling more confident in being able to deliver their current forecast. So we're looking at 100,000 meters this year so far. I think the first quarter we're receiving about 16,000 plus electric meters. That will be ramping up the following three quarters of this year. And then 25 and 26 seeing in the 100,000s range for delivery. Currently with this plan, we're planning on installation meters being delivered to us by the end of second quarter of 2026, and then requiring one more quarter to finish up our installation, so by third quarter of 2026. And then as far as water meter forecast, they are on schedule. With 6,300 forecasted for this year and 1,200 for next year. We were seeing a little bit of disruption with the water meters. With the water meters, there's two components. There's the meter itself, and then there's the radio that communicates to our base stations. And so that radio piece, this communication module, we didn't get the deliveries that we expected in February. But Census is now catching up to us, or they're delivering about 480 of those to us. Now, the things during this time frame where we are short on water meter modules, the water team has plenty of work to do in preparing the sites, the pits, basically with new lids, new boxes. And so they were able to continue on with that. So when these modules show up, they'll be able to quickly catch up too. Our high-level schedule, this is pretty much stayed the same. We're in the deployment phase right now, where we continue our meter deployment. Customers are experiencing their day one benefits. Customer communications are still going out. Tim will be talking about some good results from that. And then we'll be wrapping up our base station installations during this phase also. As far as our program budget, some small changes to this. So original budget, again, approved in 2021, was $93.2 million. And we're currently projected, our current projected cost through the end of 2026 is $90.6 million. So currently running 2.5 under at this point. Again, as we mentioned last time, we're seeing inflationary pressures with wages and such. So we anticipate that we'll need this for our meter installers as we proceed into the future. Right now we have one installer hired, and we'll be ramping that up during the year as we feel more confidence in meters being delivered to us. But we anticipate a chunk of this being used, and we'll have more to report in June as we start seeing this being realized. Oh, and again, back on, so contingency budget, I just want to repeat, we have no plans at this point for using that. All right, so let's jump into our current phase, the deployment phase, and talk about some aspects of that. So regarding meter deployment, one thing we're doing is to help, we want to shore up the number of meters that we have in-house before we hire too many installers. And so right now we're seeing our inventories going up, especially around the electric meters. We have 20,000 in our inventory right now. So that's several months worth of work right there. And then for water meters, 2,400 meters, we're fine on that. You see that module number going down to 230, so we're getting a little tight on that. Again, the water team has other work that they can do in preparing for it. So, and Census is shipping us larger batches of modules, so we're seeing that being taken care of soon. And we're still focusing on the Bothell Mill Creek area for the electric meter installations and the Lake Stevens area for our water installations. So the number, as far as technicians, how many installers we're hiring. So right now with our current numbers, we're seeing hiring up to 12 electric meter installers this year. So we're excited about that. We already have one in-house right now, and another one will be coming on board later this week and then early April. So we're excited to have that experience with our new installers. And then upcoming activities, as I mentioned, the DT-121 review with Census and having that meeting in April. Risks and challenges, we've talked about the meter supply chain, so we're seeing that definitely improving right now. And we touched on the inflationary pressures around meter exchangers. So far, right around now, we just hit the 10,000 electric meters number installed so far. That just happened over the last week, and 4,000 of our water meters have been installed. So we're excited to see those numbers grow. And we got a couple pictures here, more meters showing up in our 75th Avenue warehouse, and an action photo of a water meter and module being installed in Lake Stevens. All right, so as far as our AMI base station network deployment, we have 135 base stations installed out of 149, and we're making good progress right now in the Everett area installing those with permits in hand. So the upcoming activities, as far as our outlook, we do have some areas that will take longer to install for a couple reasons. Right now we're seeing most of our remaining 14, actually this number is changing. We've had a few more installed over the last week, so we've had three more. We're up to 138 now. So of the remaining 11 base stations, we're seeing most of those being completed the second quarter of this year. Third quarter having four more installed. And those are primarily due to large poles being ordered, and they have a long lead time to have those delivered to us. But as far as coverage, we have great coverage throughout most of the district, so it's not impacting our meter installations at all. And then there are two base stations that we have for Q1 2025, so that's out there a little ways. One of these base stations is tied to a tower, which the Washington State Patrol has ownership over. The process for getting permission and permits for that takes some time right now. They're short on staff, and so their turnaround time is much longer than we expected. And so this still could come in the third or fourth quarter of this year, but we're just putting out as a worst case, possibly next year, 2025. And then the remaining base station, we're kind of holding off on one of these because we might have enough coverage that we can have some cost savings there and not have to install that. So we're waiting until we complete our installations, and then we'll do some measurements out there to make sure we have enough coverage. If not, we still have budget to be able to install there. And then we're also moving forward installations in our South County area with five new permits being issued at this time. So as far as risks and challenges, that list is getting much smaller now. We have two remaining poles that are long lead items that take 6 months to order, as I mentioned. And I already mentioned the one tower that could be in 2025.
You mentioned that we may forego a base station.
Yes.
I'm curious if the state home is in an area where reception is weak. Is there anything that can be done to the meter or auxiliary antenna or anything that can be done to boost that?
Yeah.
Without building another tower or?
Yeah, there are kind of lighter versions of base stations that,
okay,
that can be installed that are cheaper. So that is one option. This particular one is up the Mountain Loop Highway.
Okay.
So there's only four, it's more in a campground area. There's
okay.
only 4 meters there at that time.
Wow.
So it might even make sense to, if we don't install there, even if it has a weak signal or not a good signal at all.
Yeah.
There are other options. Perhaps we still go out and read that one manually. It might still be a lot less to do it that way, but we prefer to be able to have
right.
coverage there.
Right. Thank you.
We'll look kind of at a little mini business case tied to that one. Other questions?
No more. On this section, I have no more.
All right, and this is just another action photo or base station being installed in Everett. All right, turn over presentation to Tim Mapp.
Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
We've been working with our corporate communications department to do some surveying of our customers to find out it's really how well are we doing at communicating with our customers. And we put together an Energy Insights survey. And I did want to share that the results have been very positive. And highlighted a couple numbers. 90% of the customers surveyed were positive, at best neutral. Towards the AMI and the Connect Up program. A couple other interesting things to note. I threw on here statistics. You know, over half of our customers don't realize that most of the United States already has these kind of meters out there. So maybe an opportunity for us to kind of close the gap there for some of them. And then 12% have had experience with an AMI meter in the past, and I find that number very interesting. For those who are gas customers, chances are they have a smart meter already, just realize it. Part of the survey included a ranking question asking customers, you know, what's the most, you know, important benefit, what are you looking forward to the most? And I think it's really interesting to see that outage is one that we've all heard loud and clear from our customers. But I found it very interesting that there were actually a few other categories there on the list that also popped out as being substantial for a good number of our customers, including being able to see their detailed energy use, just some of the improvements around billing that this is going to bring, as well as the rate design question, I think, really points to people interested in saving money on their bills. And I think that's something we look forward to providing them as well. Benefits realization, I wanted to talk about a couple of things that are not in the business case. There are many things that we did put in the business case, but there's other things, there's a lot more that we didn't put tie a financial aspect to it. And so, you know, we wanted to remain conservative in our numbers on the business case, but I did want to bring to the board this morning a couple of stories about benefits that we're working on. The first is a feature called transformer load management. And one of the nice things about, well, that we can do with AMI data is be able to see what the synchronized or coincidental, look at my engineering friends in the audience, coincident load is on a transformer. That's the what is happening at each moment in time. Right now, with the billing data that we get, the energy from our monthly meter reads, we're not able to see what's happening throughout time, throughout a day. And what we can do with AMI is we can look at consolidate the meters behind a transformer and be able to tell how that load is impacting those transformers. And we can see then when peak loading is happening on there. And that's important, you know, if you think about electrification, we talk a lot about electric vehicles and what that's going to do. We'll now be able to see what that load is and when that's happening on transformers. And then eventually we're gonna be able to set up alerts and reports to help us learn where transformers are already getting overloaded. We'll also be able to feed that back into our models about energy usage and when new customers, new construction is put in. I think we're going to be able to do a much better job of sizing transformers for the future and future electrical use. A really great feature that you can have with AMI data. Another one, master data validation. I know this is a bit of a technical term, maybe appreciated by our IT people in the audience. But master data is information about things. And we contrast that with transactional information, which is things like a bill or, you know, and so one of the things that we're recently experimenting with is understanding, do we have the system mapped out correctly? Do we have the transformers connected to the meters correctly? And for those, if you know about outage management, it's really important to have that modeling correct. With hundreds of thousands of meters out there, though, that's quite a record-keeping activity. Adam Peretti, our manager over our AMI operations department, has started playing with some of this data, and he was actually able to use AMI data to determine that in our first 10,000 electric meters, we actually had one of them was mismapped to the wrong transformer. So another, you know, not in the business case benefit, but it's out there, and it has a real impact on outage management. And then finally, automated reconnection. We are very excited to have this capability, and we're already starting to see the benefit of to our customers about being able to have power restored. Say a customer's moving in, or if they did happen to be shut off for payment issues, when they do make their arrangements or make a payment, they're back on right away and don't have to wait for us to schedule somebody to come back out. So that's already been a really positive customer experience that we're seeing out there.
You know, back to the transformer load management. I mean, the other thing you can do is provide or avoid outages. So
yes.
Nate, just a short distance from where I live, a transformer burned out. It was 30 years old. We put a new one in, that one burned out just a few months later, right? Because a couple of electric vehicles in the neighborhood, a couple of homes or more had converted to heat pumps, and you know, so now there's a larger transformer. But when the system is not smart, as you point out, you don't really know what those peak loads are on the transformers.
Correct. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a benefit, especially moving forward with you know, increased electric demand.
Makes a lot of sense.
As Kevin mentioned earlier, process tuning is something else that we're working on. And this is, you know, right now it's a lot about operating the AMI system and also looking at our deployment processes. So we have, these meters are actually the most advanced meters on the market in terms of temperature detection. And so we actually, I think we had things over exuberant on measuring and alarming us. So We're tuning that to try to get it back to something that's very reasonable. But that temperature sensing has actually proved to be very useful. We recently had a case of a customer whose electric load looked like it was a constant electric load, which was approaching what their service rated was rated for. It's a grill operation. So they hadn't exceeded it yet, but from temperature, we were able to tell that we might want to give them a heads up about start thinking about upsizing their service to their business. Opt-out is another area. We got some feedback from one of our customers about our opt-out process, and so reached back out to him, and we spent some time talking about that, and I think he was right. There were some things that we needed to improve, and so we're working with our corporate communications department, customer accounting, IT, on making some improvements to make that process better for our customers. And then finally, our water meter installation, we've been working on streamlining that and so much more. There's always activity going on to continue to refine our processes in running the AMI system. So looking ahead to the future, we've been starting to talk about, I think Kathy Patterson was here a while ago, and I think she coined the ConnectUp 2.0 terminology. And so we're diving into it, jumping onto that idea too. And we've got things kind of categorized in two main areas. And one is looking at what we can do with AMI for our grid. And the other is what more can we do for our customers with AMI related information. And so this first slide lists out a number of areas that we're working on or will be working on over time to try to take more and more advantage of that AMI information to get better about designing our grid, ensuring the grid is operating well. One particular example, we have advanced event analytics up there. That's a really big thing. That can be something like, if a tree is starting to grow close to a line and it doesn't actually cause a full outage, but that line, the tree branch touches the line, the meter will see a blip. And we can start correlating that and be able to identify where that tree might be before the customers experience a full-blown outage. So that's one example of what we can start doing. I think another, looking at grid load forecast, another example. Instead of, we run a lot of models to try to predict where we need to be upsizing or beefing up our grid. The models are a little bit blind. They have to work with big numbers, numbers that we collect, measurements that we collect at, say, the substation. But with AMI, we'll be able to provide a more detailed feedback loop into those models and be able to predict at more granular level on the grid where maybe we need to be upsizing or taking other actions, design actions, to make sure our grid is reliable. This was intended to be an eye chart. So if you had trouble reading it, that was fine. The point I wanted to get across here is when it comes to customer information, there is so much that AMI can help with. Not all of these are like direct AMI, but maybe supported by AMI information. And so Kathy Patterson and friends are working diligently on tackling so many of these things. And making things much better for our customers. Time of day rates would be an example you've already heard of, that they'll be working on features and things to support that. Final steps, next steps, we'll be back again in next quarter. As Kevin mentioned earlier, we'll be evaluating that new meter model to see if that's something we want to take advantage of or not. We'll continue to monitor our census meter supply and plug away and knock out the rest of the base station network in time there, and continue our meter deployment. We've got meter readers. We have one onboarding on Thursday, so I think we'll continue to see that ramp up now that we're seeing more steady supply coming in for us. Questions from the board?
I have one.
Yes.
For those meters that you have thus far installed, how many instances have there been where you had to have an electrician come in and do some repairs to accommodate the meter?
I do not have that number on me. Yes, it has. Okay. So we do have our electrician contract in place, and just heard a report from Travis Olson, our deployment project manager. He said this morning, he said it's going very well. We have had instances where we've had to call that electrician out. We did have one customer that had to remain, they were facing being out of power overnight. Our crews were able, though, to bring a device called a load saver, I believe it was. Thank you. And that allows the customer to at least get 120 volts power. May not be able to run their dryer, but at least keep the heat on in the house and most of the appliances on. So good teamwork by our crew members while we waited for a repair, which had to wait till the next day. So It is happening. Commissioner, I'll add that to our future updates in terms of.
Well, I don't need that. It's happening and.
It is happening.
It's like it's going smoothly.
It's within our anticipated.
Yeah, yeah. It's still inside of our anticipated rate. We did a forecast for our expected rate of that. So yeah, we're still operating within that and budget for that as well then too.
Well, that's all the plus for us in terms of good customers.
So one quick question. So I've had a couple outages lately and assume they're detected by the meters. I'm curious about how close we are to be able to message customers. So I was home for one of them, obviously doing a nice job. When I wasn't, I'm just sort of curious about where we are and providing a message that your power's off.
I think the messaging is going to be tied. So the metering system is going to be talking to our outage management system. So it won't be a direct from the meter. I don't have that information at hand. That's something we can come back with.
That's true. So. Yeah, I guess the other thing I'm curious about is I've seen the snow flood, my snow flood display for consumption for electricity. Is water similar?
Correct. It is. And I do know, speaking of that display, that some of that outage communication, they are working on a feature which would actually show that outage, known outage, on your snow flood. So granted, your home computer is not going to work, but if you have your cell phone and our app installed on your cell phone, you will see that information.
And my cable provider, I think, knocked out of the snow flood off the lane in my neighborhood. I got an email from them, or I tagged that a text message. So yeah. I did have some awareness, but okay.
From the cable company?
From the cable company. Yeah, the lights went out at the same time. So
yeah, that process is really a more, it's less on the AMI side, it's more on the outage certification side.
Okay.
And what our transitioning to, instead of only notifying folks that have submitted the request for notification, we will play offense on that and be able to send a notification for those that opt in as soon as that outage occurs.
I was just, because looking at that polling data, I was surprised how many people want to know that it is an outage.
I do have one other question, or yeah, it is a question, I guess. I hear threats to closing the border to Mexico. So if that were to happen, would we be shut out from importing the balance of our new census meters?
See, if that closing included a closer to trade.
Maybe there's an exception.
We haven't heard anything from our vendor. Raising alarms about that, but if it closed to trade, that would be a very big impact to us.
Okay.
Any other follow-up questions?
No.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
One other piece of color commentary on the example that Tim gave, where the customer needed an electrician. That was an elderly lady, and we had sent the troubleman back out there, serviceman back out there to check it out and get her back in power, even though it was only with one, the phase saver. But she was actually in tears, thinking we were going to leave her out of power overnight. And the serviceman said, no, we would never do that. Yeah. We're going to do everything we can to get you back in power, at least get you through the night. So she was very appreciative.
So is that like a generator that loads it?
No, it basically it's just a device that we can install at the meter that will take that single phase power and kind of bypass the other phase and allow them to have 120.
Interesting.
And I guess the other side is that obviously we found a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
All right, next up is our 2025 Integrated Resource Plan kickoff. Can we just get done with IRP?
That's the joke I was going to make.
Chris,
I just say always IRP.
Yeah, it's right.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Chris Scudder. I'm in the Power Supply Department. With me, I have Garrison and Landon, and Ian Hunter in the room, who are on the IRP team. This is our 2025 IRP kickoff. So today we're going to give you a little bit of a refresher on where we are at and where we have come from. We're going to go over the project timeline and really hit on the public process highlights. Today's informational briefing only. No decisions are needed, but we are asking for feedback and support on the 2025 IRP timeline and public process. To John's point, why are we doing this? Didn't we just get done with me? Yes, we did. State law does say we have to do an IRP every 4 years, and we have to do an update to that IRP every 2 years. The last comprehensive IRP we did was in 2021. 2023 was an update to the 2021 IRP. We also need to do a CEIP, a Clean Energy Implementation Plan, every 4 years, and that comes along with our comprehensive IRPs. So the 2025 IRP is comprehensive, it's fully scoped, and it will have an accompanying CEIP. So it's more extensive and broader scope than the 2023 IRP. So we're starting much earlier to make sure we have enough time to get this fully fleshed out by the time we need to adopt the document. So what is an IRP? It's our long-term planning document, forecasting future supply and demand. We're gonna evaluate new resources for costs, risks, benefits, and then we're gonna select an optimal mix of resources to best serve our customers at the lowest reasonable cost while meeting our environmental, regulatory, and policy requirements. This year, we also will have a 10-year Clean Energy Action Plan, or CEAP, which is another acronym you might hear, and that's part of the CETA Act, the Clean Energy Transformation Act. Furthermore, we're going to evaluate all of our conservation availability, and we'll publish our biennial conservation targets. Another portion is the CEIP, that's the Clean Energy Implementation Plan. It is the plan for how we are going to comply with the CETA. We will establish 4-year conservation and demand response targets. Within the CEIP, we'll do a public process to identify vulnerable populations and highly impacted communities, which are defined terms. Furthermore, we will create an indicating metric and an impact indicator on these populations, and then we'll forecast our impact based on the actions that we plan to take through our long-term plans. So here's the process at a high level. We have about 2 years. We're gonna take the first part of this year going through our phase 1 scoping. Then we're gonna go through kind of early next year, hopefully, through phases 2 and 3. Phase 4 will be optimization. That'll be middle of next year, or through the middle of next year. And then we'll come up with a resource strategy, and we will adopt the 2025 IRP at the end of 2025. So, and we will be bringing you along through this entire process. So this is not the last time you'll see us, and you'll probably be really tired of us by the end of it. This is some areas that staff have identified as particularly interesting. This is by no means a comprehensive or complete list of staff or of areas of study, but part of the public process will help us sharpen and focus these areas. Staff have already identified load growth and electrification. That's been on a lot of people's minds. Electric vehicles are growing, so we wanna make sure we incorporate those updates within the IRP. BPA post-2028 contract is ongoing. We will know more about that, and we'll be making a product selection during the middle of this IRP cycle. So that's gonna be a big resource, or a big deal for us. New resource options, technology is always advancing and costs for resources are always changing. So we wanna get an updated market forecast and technology information for any new resources that are potentially out there that could fit into our resource plan. We have changes to planning standards and metrics, reflecting some regional efforts that are going on. Market developments are happening. There's resource adequacy programs that are being developed across the region. These need to be reflected in our plans as well. And then finally, some modeling enhancements that we'd like to do to our hydrology, so our water supply. We want to make sure that we're accurately reflecting those changes as we go through this 2025 IRP. Like I said, this is not comprehensive, it is not final. This is just where staff have started, and part of our public process will help help sharpen these areas and identify any missing areas that are particularly concerning to our public. This is the big one I want to talk about today. We are looking for your feedback and support on the public process. What we're going to do is take some of the best ideas we've had over the last couple of IRPs. In 2021, we had a series of focus group meetings that we held here to talk with business and community leaders. And that was highly successful, if not disrupted by the pandemic outbreak. But we wanted to bring that forward into this IRP. In the 2023 IRP, we had a couple of open houses that were highly well-regarded and highly attended. So we're gonna continue to do those. Feedback we consistently heard in the 2023 IRP open house series was, please come out into the community. Do these out where we are. So we're gonna expand from a single open house to four. We're gonna try to do one in East County, one in North County, one in Everett, and one in South County to make sure that we are geographically dispersed and allowing all of our customers to engage. We're going to do a focus group with community leaders for high-level thoughts on the direction of Snohomish County and concerns that these businesses and community leaders have. So that'll be coming up here soon. The energy block party coming up here next month was really successful for us last year. So we're really happy to participate in that again. We could not do that without our comm friends over there. So shout out to them for making it happen. And as I mentioned, we are planning for multiple commission briefings for feedback throughout this process. So you will see more of us as we learn more and as we get through this study.
Any questions, Commissioner, about the engagement
program? I have a question on bullet one. Define community leaders. Are these officials that serve on boards, mayors, or are these businesses?
Well, maybe not mayors, but both businesses and community advocacy groups, business other governmental agencies. So we've contacted with our key accounts folks, and we've created a list of companies and organizations that we'd like to invite. And then the staff that is invited is really dependent on our key accounts folks for making sure that we have a really good relationship. And we have a really positive response to the focus group.
I just happen to believe that that's, to me, it's very, very important in terms of an umbrella, because they look at it, I believe, from a different perspective than perhaps the average user.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this looks very thorough to begin. I think we saw from Energy Block Party, people definitely have an appetite for this. And I think it's also not just an opportunity to have them inform on the NRP, but just be educated about us and how all of this helps us.
Yeah. Those conversations are really fun to have with people where they get to ask us questions and we get to sort of engage with our customers and really kind of get in to understand where they're at, and we get to explain where we're at.
I remember when we had the public meetings for the community solar project, we had to add events because it was a popular
song. Yep. That's why we're doing four of them this time,
rather. I think that's great.
Yeah. So.
So those will be very well publicized in advance. Mm-hmm. Because I know in Edmonds we have a climate protection committee, and there might be some people who might miss it if they don't have early information.
Yep. We're going to be doing those kind of over the summer time frame, so we're going to be doing a lot of planning for those, but they will be highly publicized and advertised. So a little bit of next steps for us. We're going to kick off the public meeting series. So like I mentioned, the energy block party is coming up. We're planning for that. We're going to begin planning our open houses and our focus group. And then we will return to you at the end of phase one to discuss the study scope in more detail and what community feedback has been received and how we're incorporating that. So any other questions for me?
Questions?
Thank you. It's an exciting time.
You know, I have a question. This may be a little out of the blue, but you know, these rolling up these IRPs across the Northwest is becoming more and more important. Organizations like PNUC, you know, putting out those load forecasts, it increases awareness. And I'm wondering if there's an IRP community where you work your colleagues at other utilities to sort of hit upon some of the same things, or like, you know, high electrification, low electrification. I wonder if there's any standardization or to help bring more meaning to these when they roll up. I mean, I know that's not why we do an IRP, but it is a benefit.
Yeah, we engage with our counterparties across a number of forums. You know, as you mentioned, is one of them.
Yeah.
All of the people that are in the BPA talks or in EDC, right? We're continually talking with those folks as well. So this is not an isolated silo that we're working in. We definitely have conversations with our counterparties at other companies, and we do. You know, we publish our IRPs, and then we also help, or we get some data from what has been published. Market research, technology research.
Also, the Vermont West Power Conservation Council is really quite important. They're just beginning their new power plant, which is going to take a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that they need to be included. Is...
Just popping real quick in case it's helpful to the. Then it is. PNUC does have.
Garrison
Lamar, Senior Manager of Power Supply. Not great at introducing myself. PNUC does have a System Planning Committee. It's all IRP planners. They meet monthly. We participate. Our whole IRP team does. We're also famous borrowers and stealers of IRPs, which means that we scrape all regional IRPs. To get data sets for the distribution of supply side resource costs from those. So we keep a really close eye on every IRP that's published in our region so that we're able to kind of distill the best information from that and consider it in the bounds of what our cost expectations are. It's also worth mentioning that we're working on a memorandum of understanding with Eugene Water and Electric Board, which would allow us to cross-functionally share the underlying mathematical models that go into the IRP as a way to help them develop their new IRP efforts, and as a way for us to get feedback from a peer utility of smart folks about things that we can modernize, improve, make more efficient, all those sorts of things. So we have some direct collaborations that we've planned also.
And Garrison, maybe just touch on when we say regionally, I think historically that would be the Northwest and more of our traditional regional peers. But does that not expand out to more of the West-wide as the region, given that markets will be affected and resource adequacy, everything?
Yeah, that's right. So we do talk the most to our neighbors sort of in the Washington, out to Montana, south down to probably northern Nevada. That's our most frequent contact, but we are looking at the planning standards and the planning practices as far east as Colorado and as far south as Arizona now. So we're all in it together, especially from a market and RAF perspective, so it's important to keep an eye on what our peers are doing in a broader sense.
Thank you. Any other follow-up questions?
I have
none. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Great job, Chris. And Pearson. That is it for our presentation this morning.
Okay. It is now 10:04, and our meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the Commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m.